Chapter 24. Home Life. Yosef and Mara. 6 days passed. The Kolsko household settled into a routine. Yosef and Mara had moved into their new house before its final construction details and those of surrounding structures were finished, but Yosef wanted to be in their home. The Keelan Manor, although large, was crowded with the new additions to the entourage, and it wasn't theirs. They increased the originally planned 3 workers and guest cottages to 4. Balwas and Carnegie shared one, for when one or both had duty as bodyguards. Gwynedd Walston and Miramel Killen and their 2 daughters, Morwena and Dwina, shared a 2nd cottage. Honoran completed the Kolsko household with a bedroom in the main house. A cook, Cyrus Clithrow, a widow who had relatives in Kernford, rode her own horse back and forth. Balwas and Carnegie made themselves useful, but hovered around Yosef whenever someone they didn't know came to the house. Both took their bodyguard duties seriously. At other times, Balwas trained city Keelanders to stay on horses, and Carnegie played the intimidating sergeant major. Gwynedd likewise helped with a variety of chores, which included caring for Aeneas, cooking when Cyrus needed help or wasn't home, and, the most important to Mara, keeping Honorand company when Mara was away from the house or busy in her study. All of the women wondered at Mara's speedy recovery from childbirth. Most men didn't notice, yet Yosef wasn't most men. He noted how quickly she recuperated and filed it away for future thought, pleased when Mara resumed many of her previous activities. Mara again managed his schedules and continued planning for the university. She understood the necessity of giving the plans a lower priority, but there were still things to be done. She insisted that planning for the future symbolized faith that the Cadeli would have a future, in which a university would play a major role. She also began contributing to Peter Kenrick's logistics planning. The resumption of work led her to question herself and her roles, particularly that of a mother. Her model of motherhood came from her own family, where Breda ran Keelan Manor and had only informal roles outside the family. It was a rare day when Breda didn't spend most hours inside the manor or on the grounds. For Mara, life was different. Many days she spent half of the day or more at St. Tomo's Abbey or at the clan headquarters in Kernford. And even when home, she might be in her study reviewing communications to and from her father or Yosef, keeping up with her studies of off-island languages, or poring over writings about other nations and people of Anyar, scrounged from libraries all over Cadellium. On top of all of these tasks, she was a new mother. Mara worried that she wasn't taking proper care of Aeneas and chafed at the endless amount of attention he needed, which took away from everything she wanted to do and felt she needed to do. She found herself almost angry at Yosef when he offered to help with the baby. Changing, feeding, and washing Aeneas fascinated him. Although his opportunities were limited because of endless demands on him from his shops and factories, her father and his advisors, and seemingly everyone else. She caught herself wondering whether he passively criticized her for neglecting Aeneas, even though she recognized it was probably her imagination. Her internal conflict grew until she took the baby and walked the half mile to see her mother. "I'm a terrible mother," Mara exclaimed, almost in tears. Her mother got within 10 feet of her and stopped, surprised at the outburst. Breda recovered quickly and moved to embrace her daughter and grandson. "I wondered if such thoughts would hit my precocious daughter, as they do all new mothers. I thought maybe you were above such self-doubts, and I'm both relieved and sorry you're not."
"You're glad?" exclaimed Mara.
"No. Glad isn't the word. but you have always castigated yourself for being different from other young women. This just proves you're not that different. Questioning yourself is something all good mothers go through. But I don't spend enough time with Aeneas, she wailed. And when I do, I find myself wishing I were somewhere else. Breda sighed, took her daughter by the arm, and sat with her on a veranda swing. Do you love Aeneas?
Oh, merciful God, yes. I love holding him and breastfeeding him, and yes, even sometimes changing him. At times, it's like he's the only thing in the world. Then I remember some work I need to be doing, and it all changes. What's wrong with me?
Nothing is wrong, dear. You're going through what all new mothers do. In your case, it's worse because you have tasks outside the home that are not only important to you, but are important to Keelan and all of Cadellium. I only had our family, so I didn't have these added pressures to put on myself.
What do I do, Mother? Pleaded Mara.
You have plenty of help with the baby, don't you?
Lord, yes.
Honorin adores him, and Gwennet's always ready to take care of him. When I'm not around for feedings, Mirimel is a great wet nurse. She's not the brightest person, but totally good-hearted, and has plenty of milk for both her own daughter and Aeneas. Mara smiled.
Oh, Mother, you should have seen Yosef's face when we first met Mirimel. He thought I would be the only one to talk to her. But he went along when I said he should be there too, since her husband died at Moreland City. I assumed he'd want to give her condolences. Mirimel had a daughter with her, and while we talked, she started breastfeeding. After Dwina finished, Mirimel assured me she had plenty of milk and how she loved breastfeeding. She said she needed another baby to feed because her breasts ached with more milk than Dwina wanted. When she fed Aeneas, the little beggar went right for the nipple, which is bigger than mine. I think Yosef felt embarrassed by it all. No, there's plenty of help with Aeneas. And then there's you and my sisters, always begging me to bring Aeneas here, and you'll watch him. Have you talked to Yosef about this?
I know what he'll say.
Mara's tone showed her annoyance.
He'll look all confused at what I'm talking about and then start offering reasons why it's not true. And if it is, he'll propose solutions such as him trying to help more.
Breda had to restrain her laughter, and Mara missed the twinkle in her mother's eye.
So let me see if I understand.
You love your baby and caring for him, except when you recall other duties you want to do. However, when you are engaged in those activities, you have three women around the house, along with me and your sisters, all more than willing to help. And then, oh merciful God, you have a husband who obviously does not think you a bad mother and wants to help more. Surely this is a nightmare. Mara looked angrily at her mother, then broke into raucous laughter.
I knew I could count on you for motherly advice, Mara roared.
Breda joined in, and minutes passed before their laughter subsided.
Yes, yes, Mara admitted. You warned me, as did Dira, my cousins, Gwened, and who knows how many other women, to expect doubts and depression. I guess I didn't take their words seriously. After all, I am Mara Kolskokeelan, and I'm above such frailties. If nothing else, it's a lesson in humility. Not that I expect to be content. I expect I'll always worry that I'm not doing enough.
Which will only prove the positive, not the negative.
Keep that in mind, said Breda.
Kolsko Estate, bedroom. The coupling was as gentle as Yosef could manage. It had been only 4-6 days since the birth, and despite Mara's insistence she felt fine,
she still experienced a bit of soreness, along with awkwardness, in finding a position that felt comfortable. However, she didn't begrudge her husband's need, and she made the overture and deflected his concern. Later, they lay together side by side, the back of her head against his face, his arms wrapped around her. His thoughts dwelled on her naked body against his. With one hand, he stroked her abdomen, which had shrunk back to near its original shape. He thought about its previous contents, idly wondering whether he'd bumped the baby while it was in there, or if it had felt the rocking motion during the last months before they'd stopped, a few 6 days before the birth. Mara turned to face him, her breasts and belly pressed to him, her face against his chest.
"Yosef, what do you fear most?"
"Huh? Where did that come from?"
"Oh, I was talking with Mother today. It made me think about what I fear. Although it should be the Narthani and what may happen, I find the fear that's most on my mind is that I'll be a bad mother. And then I think how selfish that is. And, oh, you know."
He hugged her tighter.
"All I can say is that I don't have any such concerns. You know you can ask me for any help you need, but only you can deal with what goes through your mind."
His words relieved Mara, though she suspected people might think they sounded cold. She didn't doubt him when he said he had no qualms about her ability to be a good mother or about her being able to talk to him about it. His sincerity just was. She also appreciated his not thinking he could make her thoughts different just by something he said or did. It was ultimately up to her. They stayed molded together for several minutes in silence until Yosef spoke. "Mara, wife, lover, mother of my child, I've always respected you right from the first time we met. Such a lovely young woman. Even if you didn't realize it. So smart, so responsible, though at times too much so. When we got married, it was a rational thing to do. It solved problems for everyone. You, me, your family's responsibility to have heirs. I think it's been good for you, but there's no doubt it has been for me." Mara didn't know where her husband's words were going. He seldom spoke of his deepest thoughts or emotions.
"Things changed," he said. "Even before the baby came, and even before we knew you were pregnant, I knew I loved you."
She burrowed her face tighter against his chest, her free arm clutching around his back, her heart pounding.
"I know I should have told you earlier. I guess I was afraid of what you'd say, since neither of us ever used the words. I just thought you should know how I felt. But you shouldn't feel you have to say the words back. I'm content just having you for a wife."
"Oh, Yosef,"
she said into his chest, then pulled her head back to speak clearly.
"I knew after the first few months that I loved you. Like you, I didn't know how you felt, so I kept it to myself. Maybe I was afraid of losing the hope that you loved me too, and that kept me silent."
"Well, aren't we a pair?" said Yosef, his voice choked, though also indicating amusement. They lay together for another 10 minutes. Both relaxing after the spoken words.
"Yosef, you didn't answer. What's your greatest fear?"
It was a question he faced regularly. His answer wasn't that he feared being exposed as more than a stranger from another part of Anyar. He suspected that by this time, his reputation would let him lie or evade any revelation.
as with Mara, his mind told him the Narthani threat should be paramount. But it wasn't.
I'm like you, Mara. I worry about something focused on myself. Maybe it's just part of being human. I'm afraid I'll give advice that people will follow, and it will turn into a disaster. With deaths and other consequences, the clans can't recover from.
Honorind. The travel from Moreland City to the Keelan border had been hard but liberating. Despite stepping into the unknown, her going to find Gwynedd and the other women and their trek to Keelan had been the freest she'd felt in years. Whatever the future held, she felt as if she'd left nothing behind. She first saw the man she suspected was Mara's husband the second day on the wagons, when the group of armed men approached. She hadn't known what to expect when she met Yosef for the first time. All she had known about him came from Mara's letters, which described the mysterious, interesting man found naked on a Keelan beach. Then the letters changed, with more descriptions of time spent with Yosef, her confusion about what she felt, her taking the step to propose marriage, and finally, before the raid on Llanwith, Mara's growing satisfaction with the marriage. Anarin's first hint that there was something special about Mara's polite but otherwise undistinguished husband was the obvious deference given him by the other men in the mounted party. Anarind had picked up nuances of men's interactions during her months in Hounslow and saw how the Narthani behaved around one another. Their ranks and social positions laid out rules and formalities, even when the men didn't realize it. That experience told her Yosef was, in many ways, the equal of Memas Erdalin, the Narthani colonel who had been her master. The difference was that she sensed caution or fear in the behavior of men under Erdalin, whereas with Yosef, the men showed respect, tinged almost with affection. The reunion with Mara was everything she dreamed of and had feared wouldn't match the dream. Mara and Yosef quashed her doubts about where she would go and how she would live. She would live with them as long as she wanted. As 6 days came and went, the previous month didn't go away. But she could feel a scar forming, a sign of healing and evidence of past wounds. The birth of Aeneas was a time of joy and sadness. Joy at witnessing a new soul appear in the world and sharing the experience with Mara. Sadness because it might be a joy she would never experience. Anarind expected Mara to take many 6 days to recover from the birth, but to everyone's surprise except Anarind's, Mara was up and active within days. Anarind could only shake her head. After all, wasn't this Mara Keelan, Kolsko Keelan, who could do anything she set her mind to? The warmth and casual acceptance of her by all members of the household elicited an occasional embarrassed flicker of envy within Anarind. She remembered her own family and her lost dream of marrying the distant cousin and starting a family, one she had sworn would be different than her own. She didn't understand how Mara seemed somehow different. It had nothing to do with how Mara treated her. Though it took a few 6 days for them to slip back into knowing what the other was thinking, based on the merest change of expression or bodily twitch, Mara was more relaxed. As long as Anarind had known her, Mara had seemed to exude an aura that combined defensiveness and assertiveness. Now she exhibited a calmness that was missing in the past. Mara seemed surprised when Anarind mentioned this. Then she wondered to her friend whether it was due to Yosef, and how he seemed to accept everything about his wife.
"Is it Yosef, or is it you?"
Anarind asked. Mara looked thoughtfully at her friend. You mean, is it really Yosef who treats me differently than others do? Or is it how I perceive it? I suppose I can't be sure. Maybe it's a bit of both. I have no doubt he treated me differently right from when I first met him. Partly it's because he's not from Gedalium. But somehow, there's more to it. Maybe it's because since I married Yosef, so many new things have happened in my life. Oh, getting married and all that entails, of course. And then there's Aeneas. Although I helped Father by being a scribe and assistant, it was informal, something we didn't admit to everyone. Since Yosef, that's different. I'd do as much or more to help him as I did for Father, but Yosef has always publicly acknowledged it with pride. Not that by now anyone would have problems with almost anything Yosef Kolsko does or approves of. And the university idea I told you about? Think of it. A large center of scholastics with me in charge. When Yosef first proposed it, I felt as if I could fly. After my emotions settled, I became more aware of how much work it would be and of the responsibility. But by then, it had coalesced into determination and a vision of a long-term calling that would truly be Mera Kolsko Keelan's. Again, things have changed since then. Not just Aeneas, but the Narthani and how everything has to shift to them as the only priority for the clans. But the idea of the university is still in my mind as something that's mine. Something to return to when the time is right. After listening to Maris theorizing about her changed outlook, Honorin said, "No matter what the cause, you're still Mera. But it's like you're Mera the woman, instead of Mera the girl.